of the spirit of the higher world. "You deserve a reward, shaman. From now on, we shall use her to do our bidding," added the white spirit. "You may tell Kornik that his debt has been repaid."
Control over your character has been temporarily blocked. At the moment, your character is possessed by the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds.
To say that I was surprised would have been an understatement. I didn't even bother swiping this message aside, reading it again and again, and trying to figure out its secret significance. And on the face of it, the significance was terrifying. This very instant, some highly advanced imitator was controlling my shaman. What the hell was this? My inquiry to tech support wrote itself on the fly. Trying to use the proper legal jargon, I inquired in pure curse words what the hell they were thinking when they took away control of my shaman from me. How was I supposed to know if, at the moment, all my funds weren't being transferred to strangers or my personal information wasn't being downloaded? Plus 1,000 reputation with the spirits of the higher and lower worlds. Current status, exalted.
"Man, this is impossible,"
Flyta whispered in rapture once I'd returned to the game world. I looked around and apprised the situation. I'd never seen such astonishment on my student's face before. Once upon a time, I happened across a video in which a child who had lost his sight in infancy regained it following a surgical procedure. I'd never seen such a sincere and incommunicable elation and, simultaneously, shock. And I imagined I'd never see it again. Things like this are unique, and you can count yourself lucky to witness them even once in your life. But I was wrong. I was lucky enough to see it a second time, and in person, giving Anastaria her due for forcing me to always keep my in-game camera running. I checked Flyta's properties and swallowed hard. Nothing in this game had prepared me for this.
Draco the Decembrist, Great Shaman, Dragon of Light.
"You changed your name," I said, astounded, refusing to believe my eyes. "And your race." Flyta, or rather Draco, didn't say anything. Damn it! How am I supposed to tell her apart from my totem now? Suddenly there were too many Dracos in Barleona.
"All right, kids, that's quite enough of staring at each other and not knowing what and how and when and where."
Nuclear scattered the lingering silence.
"Girl, don't you have to start performing the Supreme Spirit's tasks as urgently as possible?"
Yes, I'll just be a second,"
muttered Flyta Draco, still in shock and staring at a text only she could see.
"Hang on,"
I managed to cry before my student dove into the portal that had just opened up. She hadn't cast a scroll, which meant only one thing. The girl had received some curious scenario. If that was the case, I'd need to make the most of this opportunity. The brand-new Draco glanced at me with her enormous gilded eyes, glinting like polished gold in the sunlight. Muttering something about changes for the better, I opened the clan management interface and invited her into the Legends of Barleona. I wasn't about to let a dragon, whose powers and abilities still remained a mystery to me, go off freely in the unknown.
"Thank you,"
a smile bloomed on my student's face.
"Man, I will complete all my quests and then tell you about what happened here. Thank you, and thank you."
Flyta Draco looked away, blushed, and then glanced up at me again,
appearing beside me, and I didn't even have time to blink when her lips alighted on mine. The kiss was initially so clumsy and strained, yet so insistent and unexpected that I, unwillingly, replied at last, lowering my face to meet the girl's desire.
"I understand everything, but I couldn't help myself," the girl said, after the sweet moment, which seemed to last thousands of years, ended.
Sparkling from happiness like a Christmas tree, the girl entered the portal, leaving me in a state of happy shock. Even though what had happened had been unexpected, I can't say that I didn't like it. Damn it, I did like it. Flyta was an attractive girl, and it'd be dumb to pretend that I never wanted to get to know her better. So I did. And I can't say that I didn't like what I discovered, either. Something tells me that I should edit the video of what had happened in Cartus before showing it to Anastaria.
"All right. You five don't have patrons of that level."
Nuclear's voice reached me through my fog, reminding me that I was not alone. I had to concentrate and dispel the lovely stupor to see that he was speaking to the five guards who were still zombies. A note was lying right at my feet, which I guessed had been written by Clowder. The boy himself was nowhere in sight.
"Gather your belongings and follow this student. Turning back into a living creature is a difficult and tedious venture. You'll have to work hard."
Somehow, entirely unnoticeably, I remained completely alone in the middle of a forgotten cemetery in Cartus. The guards were ushered out by the monks, thereby preparing a new batch of exciting quests for the players, from "Bring 100,500 crab whiskers from crabs killed in the second harvest moon," to "Sing a song of those who fell in battle against the mages of Malabar." In other words, gather some stuff so that the zombies could return to their living selves. The only upsetting thing was that I wouldn't get a crack at it. Only Cartossians were allowed to participate. I mourned this fact a few moments until I recalled that I already had an interesting quest to do for the next few hours. The Hermit. Stacy was occupied, Flyta was taking a stroll somewhere, and Mr. Krestowski was still cooped up in the Imperial Palace discussing the future tournament, so I had the unique opportunity to find out who the hell this Hermit was. Why were there so many loose ends tied up in meeting him? And furthermore, he was an artificer who knew about the Titan armor. Shivers ran down my spine. I had promised Creel that he would kill the dragon. Damn it! Not only had I managed to spoil that quest, but I had broken my word. Squelching my urge to get my amulet and arrange a meeting with Creel, and making a mental note to be more conscientious about my own promises, I opened the map and entered the Hermit's coordinates into my blink input box. An elephant is best eaten bit by bit.
A new territory has been discovered. Sylvan Plateau. Quest available. Artificer. Stage 1. Prepare for the meeting. Do you wish to start the quest?
I found myself at the foot of one of the many mountains in the Elma Range, a sierra that ran like a terrible winding scar from the north to the very south of our continent. The Hermit's location may have been in the south, but the area around me didn't resemble a tropical resort in the least. I could make out the forest among the heaps of ice and snow, but the area immediately around me may as well have been Antarctica. The fragments of wood and frozen leaves that poked up through the ice here and there indicated that there had recently been a leafy forest here, like the one I could see in the distance. But something had happened, and nature here had changed. Or, to the opposite, everything had happened the way it was meant to. Shrugging my shoulders, leaving the mystery of this glacier's sudden appearance in the middle of the tropical south unsolved, I pushed the yes button. The time had come to meet the hermit. 10 minutes elapsed before I realized that the meeting would have to wait. My character received the unpleasant frozen buff, as well as chill and frostbite. My movement speed dropped by 90%, and I was informed that I could no longer summon a flying pet. Yet still, the hermit didn't appear. As bitter as it was to admit it, I was forced to open the description and read what I had to do to prepare for the meeting. Another 10 minutes in this freezing cold would kill me. Opening my quest log, I stared grimly at the description and realized that I had some entertaining minutes, hours, and possibly days waiting ahead of me. The description promised me nothing else. Prove that you are worthy of meeting the Master.
And there aren't any caves or portals or signs or anything? Anastaria asked, offering me a mug of steaming coffee.
Even though the game was above all just a game, and my sensory perception was turned down to zero, I had grown so cold morally that I really felt a chill when I crawled out of my capsule. It was warm, comfortable, and light in our apartment, but I was shaking as if I really was in an icy forest. In a few hours of scouring up and down the glacier, I hadn't managed to accomplish anything but freezing myself and my character to death, at which point we'd been sent to respawn. Cute. I wasn't killed by some terrible mob or a dungeon boss, but by a huge pile of snow and ice that had appeared who knows where from.
Nope,
I replied, wrapping myself in the quilt and exhaling the stunning aroma of freshly brewed Jambi coffee. I glanced over at the roasted chicken that Stacy had ordered in from the nearby takeout place. My spouse had emerged from the game an hour before me and had arranged our food, drink, and comfort.
There's nothing there at all.
As you can imagine, it's pointless to ask on the forums.
I don't have this info either. Head over to the library. Maybe you'll find something about the artificers there.
Stacy had initially been interested in the hermit until she realized that this NPC was made for craftsmen and would be useless to her. The girl sighed heavily, looked at the wall that had some drawing on it, and blurted out,
"Dan, I talked to my dad. The Celestial Empire will be in Calragan tomorrow night."
"What?" I almost scalded myself with the coffee.
"You said that we have a week." "Our informant turned out to be a double agent,"
Stacy smirked sadly.
"They were leading us around by our nose, like a bunch of lambs, slowly leaking the info we were looking for. The Celestial Fleet will land on our continent tomorrow evening, and they're bringing an obelisk."
"One thing on top of another."
"What did you decide?"
I was certain that Phoenix would have decided on a plan of action by now.
"Remember our meeting with my father this morning? He was checking to see how well you understood the situation. He wanted to see whether you'd understand that there are specially trained people whose job it is to develop strategy, or whether you'd begin to spout off one idea after another. This morning, my dad was disappointed in you, yet our analysts now believe that the option of attacking the obelisk transport in your dragon form is the only possible way to stop the invasion. And you managed to come up with it in mere seconds, on the fly.
You don't have any desire to study statistics and data processing by any chance?
Thanks. Maybe later.
So, in other words, we need to attack the Celestial Fleet tomorrow? Will it be you and I, or will Plinto join us?
We need someone who can destroy the obelisk. Plinto is the only one who could do this quickly and completely. Dan, tell me, what was the kiss with your student all about?
How in the... I understand very well that poker is not my thing, since I blushed from head to toe. No one's ever caught me so handily before.
A spontaneous, friendly kiss as a sign of gratitude for inviting her to the clan and helping her become a dragon. I blurted out the first thing that popped into my head.
Can I see the video? You were recording, weren't you?
Everything turned upside down inside of me. Stacy was asking the questions so calmly that I got scared. Lying would be useless, as would be wheeling and dealing. I felt in my heart of hearts that it would only make things worse. I was desperately trying to remember how long the kiss had lasted and where my hands had been, yet I managed to reply in a relatively calm voice, "Yes, of course. I'll bring it up on the screen right now." Both of our capsules were connected to our home AV system. Such was the symbiosis of a powerful computer, a smart home, a multimedia center, and God knows what else, all intended for the single purpose of extracting as much money as possible from the consumer. Stacy had set up the capsules so that the footage from Barleona was immediately recorded by the computer, to make it easier to analyze it, according to her. Today's kiss was there, too.
"Didn't I tell you? A simple formality," I said, sensing all the pressure leave me. Without expecting it, I had turned into an athlete before the final burst. Every muscle was tensed to its maximum, and then some. My kiss with Flyta Draco had lasted only 8 seconds. I counted, and my hands remained hanging at my sides, while my generally shocked appearance only suggested one thing. I had no idea what was going on. Anastaria hummed significantly.
"A friendly kiss, you say?"
"Of course," I reassured her, and, trying to change the subject, asked, "Why don't you tell me what you dug up about the guy with the treasure map?"
"Basically nothing. Hunter Sabantool, the Fortunate, level 85, just over a year total playtime. There's nothing about him that stands out. He doesn't post on the forums, the hunter trainer doesn't remember him, and he doesn't even have a rare pet. An ordinary, mediocre player. There's an endless number of players like him in Barleona. His current whereabouts are unknown, but my people are on it. That's all the info I have from today's efforts."
"Weird," I continued, trying to put distance between me and the kiss. "How would such an ordinary player have a map like that?"
"The weird thing is something else," Stacy corrected me. "He could have found the map. Barleona's full of coincidences. The question here is, how would he know that you'd be interested in his offer? How does he know that you're interested in Carmandont and anything related to him? He wrote 2 letters, and yet they're so different that, in my view, they were written by 2 different people. The style's different, the approach is different, the gist is different, everything's different, only the sender's the same."
"Then let's meet with him and get to know him better." Stacy had piqued my interest. "Really, how did this person find out this info?"
First, we need to solve the Celestial situation. Then we can get back to Sabantul. He's not going anywhere, that's for sure. For the moment, my dear husband, the time has come to figure out how you react or don't react when someone kisses you. Is there something you want to tell me?
I was forced to expend my full arsenal of words and explanations to prove to Stacy the most evident thing, that she was my one and only love on the entire planet. Embracing the girl, quietly sobbing on my shoulder, I swore to myself that there would be no more kisses. I'd exhausted all my arguments this time around, and I wouldn't survive a second one. I looked dejectedly at the glacier and cursed the developer who had come up with it, or perhaps, just as likely, the player who had caused this chaos. Over the 12 hours of my temporary absence, the ice had receded from the trees. Not much, only a few meters, but the burbling brooks were glibly informing me that this anomaly had come into existence recently and would soon vanish. This was no natural phenomenon, and I could even guess who had caused it. Creel the Titan had the ice affinity, so I could bet that his big old paws had something to do with ice popping up this deep in the hot and smarmy south. It couldn't have been anyone else. Stacy had been kind enough to grant me 6 hours to figure out the issue with the hermit, after which she explained to me that I would be grabbed by the scruff and sent to save the continent from the invasion. 6 hours, of which I'd already spent 20 minutes sitting here meditating on this ice, unable to understand what I was supposed to do. To prove that I was worthy of meeting the master, the most logical outcome that followed from this phrase was that I had to craft some pretty and preferably unique thing, here and now. To prove that I was a cool artificer and all that. The one problem was how that would help me solve the problem. It remained unclear. Besides, I was certain that creating an artifact was just too banal to earn a meeting with the hermit. He wouldn't even notice such a trifle. I needed something more large-scale. But what? The shadow from the nearest mountain shielded the glacier from the sun's rays, slowing its melt. Various beasts would periodically emerge from the forest, look at the obstacle that had appeared on their customary paths with surprise. Their imitators would begin to compute new paths, while the model froze in an entirely unnatural pose. I especially got a kick out of a level 83 wolf who began to update his pathing while standing still on one paw. I figured that even a Shaolin monk would have envied his technique. Once the wolf had vanished back in the forest, I shuddered. The tautology notwithstanding, the ice was freezing, forcing my thoughts to move slower and slower. Eventually it occurred to me to call Creel and ask him about the hermit. An intelligent and worthy idea. However, to my immense surprise, the Titan wasn't available. I could not communicate with a player who was in the Divine Chambers. In a burst of irritation, I kicked a hunk of ice beside me. A small piece broke off of it, rolled along the ground, encountered a spot of sunlight, and vanished in an instant. It didn't even leave a wet spot behind it. A wry smile unfolded on my face. So, they had used Creel to create an ice trial for me? Excellent! I'll deal with it like an ordinary player. And what do ordinary players do when they encounter a problem? They ask for help. For the first time in a long time, I opened my clan management screen. Yeah, it was time to scratch my head in bemusement. The clan membership counter was growing without pause, incrementing by one or two members every couple seconds. At the moment, the clan had just over 30,000 members, of whom about a third were currently online. It took an effort to look away from the statistics. All the various classes, races, primary professions, secondary professions, and their levels that were in my clan. There was so much diverse information about every clan member that, just for laughs, I tried to find the real address and real name data tables. Damn, these were there too. No one had entered their addresses, and yet more than 8,000 players had entered their real names. I hummed. Clan management was turning from let's run around together to a serious enterprise that demanded time, energy, and resources. I had an outsourced manager who dealt with the clan's financial issues. I had recruiters who looked for people to join the clan, but no actual leadership. There weren't any raid leaders, treasurers, or officers. There were 30,000 people who wanted to get their projections. I looked at the little dragon whirling around me. I had grown so accustomed to him that I barely noticed him anymore. And I realized a terrible fact. I needed one more deputy. I needed someone who would play the role of the head of the Legends of Barleona. Someone who would make the decisions, organize the raid parties, and act as the clan's representative at various events. Shaman Mayan had to step back into the shadows and do what he did best. Craft. Managing people wasn't my thing. When I made this final decision, it was like a stone had rolled off my shoulders. I sent my current coordinates to Viltrius, returned to the clan settings, found the mass mailing tab, and sent out a letter to everyone in the clan. Hello, everyone. People, I need your help. Right here and right now, I need players who can cast fire spells. Anything they can. Lava, fireballs, bonfires. Hell, if you've got a lighter, if such a thing even exists, I can use it. I need to melt a huge mass of ice in a few moments. But I need organized help. I need groups of players. I need raid groups that will become raid parties. And the people who organize them will become Legends of Barleona raid leaders with all the attendant privileges and powers. The raiders that come with them, too. I need people within the hour, whether they're our own or strangers. It doesn't matter. The groups need to be sent to me through the Altameda portal. My Major Domo has my coordinates. Feel like taking a chance and becoming someone in this clan? Then make it happen. You have 1 hour. The countdown begins now. I didn't really have another choice. Stacy had placed really tight time constraints on me. Swiping away the notification that had appeared before me, just like any other member of the clan, I kept an eye on the clan chat. A minute after my letter, things were still quiet. And then the chat exploded. Dozens, if not hundreds, of messages began streaming in every second, announcing their services as officers as well as foot soldiers. Why? Stacy's thought popped into my head. The hermit? Not quite, but close. I related the current situation to Stacy and the decision I had made about dealing with the glacier. To my surprise, Stacy didn't approve of my sudden initiative. She explained that since only a third of the players were in-game, the chances of there being good organizers among them were minimal. There would be no consideration for the players' level distribution, nor a common pool of resources.
Only she, Mr. Krestowski, and I had access to the clan statistics. So, in a word, there was nothing here but my urge to melt the glacier. Things just weren't done this way, and this was no way to determine clan leadership, in clans that take themselves seriously, at least.
"What do you want me to do?"
A pretty female voice jolted me from my prostration. When she really wants to, Stacy can still artfully place everything in its right place, leaving whoever's talking to her with a certain feeling of his personal insignificance and foolishness. I checked the time. 5 minutes had elapsed since my message, and there were already 500 players standing before me with an elf at their head, waiting for my orders. The clan management screen displayed all the information I needed about this long-eared girl. Marl Regina, a level 155 elf priest. Real name? Stacy. Clan membership? 14 weeks. That was it. "I need to melt this crap," I pointed at the glacier. "Turn it all into a lake of magma."
"I need clarification. You want us to melt the ice, or melt the ground and stones into a lake of magma? That would require different resources."
"The latter." I became curious whether terrain in Barleona could be terraformed. Would the game allow such drastic changes to the terrain? Would the Guardian's imitator permit it? I wanted to check it out.
"Luca, I need fire mages, lots of them."
Marl called a friend on her amulet and then looked back at me.
"Mayan, do you know any geomancers, or do I need to find those too?"
"That's an odd profession. But it rings a bell." I liked Marl's approach to the problem at hand. The only thing that interested her were clear, laconic, pointed questions.
"Geomancy is terraforming. The geomancer's spells allow her to change the Barleona terrain to her wishes. We won't be able to create a lake of magma unless we use players that have such powers. At the moment, I don't know anyone who can do this, which is why I'm asking you whether I have to find them, too."
"I see. Wait a second." I reached for an amulet and called Svard, one of the independent players of Barleona, who dealt with crafting.
"If this isn't pizza delivery, I have nothing further to say," barked the voice in the amulet.
"This is way cooler than pizza," I replied in kind. "I need a specialist who can vandalize Barleona terrain."
"Is that you, Mayan?"
The tone changed immediately and completely. "Uh-huh. Svard, I need a high-level geomancer, and I need him now."
"What am I, a recruiting agency?"
The answer came in such a tone that, without seeing Svard, I knew he was already deep in thought.
"Do you need someone from Malabar, or will Cartus do, too?"
"Could be from the Celestial, for all it matters," I jibed. "I'll send you the contact to my new raid leader. She'll get in touch with you."
"So it's true, and Stacy is with you again?"
"Yes, but this isn't Stacy. That is, this one's called Stacy, too, but she's not the Stacy you're thinking of. The girl's in-game name is Marl."
Interesting. Give me 10 minutes. Over and up."
"You heard me. Here are the contacts." I sent a copy of the amulet to Marl.
"Raid leader?"
The girl's face displayed an emotion for the first time. Trying to act precisely and accurately, as if she had some military past, Marl wasn't ready to receive the third rank in the clan from me just like that, without any test. Well, this will let her know the kind of crew she's running with now.
"Welcome, and all that," I smiled, making the necessary changes in the clan settings. "You are the first to bring me a combat-ready group, so you're a raid leader already. No point in wasting time. You have your orders. By the way, if any new groups appear, you're in charge. I need complete coordination among all the raid parties, senior raid leader." I made the last remark as the portal opened and players began pouring out of it. Raid party number 2 had arrived. Excellent. It had only been 10 minutes. If I understand correctly, Marl had managed to assemble her raid party within the clan, without advertising it to Klutzer or Magdi. She had players between level 80 and 160 who clearly posed no interest to the other raid leaders. No big deal. Low levels is something everyone has to reckon with. The important thing is that the players have the desire, the opportunity, and the ability. I'd take care of the rest.
"The time has come. Everyone's in position. We are ready," said Marl,
exactly an hour after I had sent my letter to the clan. By this point in time, a huge crowd of people had gathered at the glacier. 3 fully equipped raiding parties with 50 fighters in each, about 100 mages, necromancers, druids, and other magic classes who could cast fire, as well as Svard with a trio of taciturn players, Spiteful Noom, who had climbed out of Altamita for the occasion, and Astaria, astonished by such a gathering of players, and the chief raiding parties of Phoenix. There was a host of people. Marl's amulets didn't fall quiet for a second, but the girl didn't even think of complaining. Her quick replies, eagerness, and demeanor made it clear that she was relishing the responsibilities that had been entrusted to her. Perfect. The important thing was that she didn't wither under the pressure. I'd need to make sure to issue her some nice bonus as compensation and incentive to continue in this vein. "Let's begin. Let's see a lake of fire instead of this ugly glacier." I didn't really know myself why I needed a branch office of hell here in the foothills of the Elma Mountains, but to be honest, what drove me to invite all these people here remained a mystery to me as well as why they'd all agreed to come. In my view, there was only one correct way to reach the hermit: craft a fire artifact. And yet my premonition, stubbornness, and desire to do everything my way all demanded their own course of action, a course of action that would go against all reason and logic, just the way I liked it. When the ice began to melt, I turned into a dragon and flew up into the sky. The spectacle the players had affected was hypnotizing, and I didn't want to miss a single moment. Red streams of lava from the mages, golden fire elementals from the shamans, the druids' phoenixes sparkling with all the colors of the rainbow, the necromancers' dark and grim demons. Thanks to the game's physics engine, the ice was melting without any heat or steam, so nothing kept me from enjoying the show.
"Your turn, Svard," Marl commanded when not a shiver of ice remained.
Svard, Noom, and the 3 taciturn players Svard had brought stuck a staff into the ground. The top of the staff looked like a gnarled root with other roots sticking out of it. Then the geomancers joined hands and began to circle it. At first, I couldn't help but smile. But when the staff's roots began to emit a green fog, a thin snake that darted towards the flaming section of terrain, my smile vanished. The wisps of fog was at once beautiful and terrifying. On their way, they pierced several fallen trees as if they didn't notice them.
Only the embers that flared up in their wake suggested that the wisps were real and not at all harmless. After 10 seconds, the geomancer circle began to slow down. The players' faces grimaced with pain, and yet they went on spinning, performing a ritual only they understood. Reaching the area the glacier had occupied, the tentacles of fog began running its course back and forth and interweaving until they formed a fine grid that looked like a net superimposed over the varying slopes of the terrain.
"Burn it!"
wheezed Svard when the net of fog had been completed. He collapsed to the ground, as did the other members of the ritual circle. The healers rushed over to heal them, but everything was in vain. All 5 geomancers had been sent to respawn.
"Revive them and fire!"
I'd never imagined that a small girl could scream like that, but the game didn't care about what I imagined. The raid leader's order should have been audible to everyone, so it had to be loud and so forceful that no one would think of questioning what they had to do. Even I tried to spit some fire, but the system helpfully reminded me that Dragon's Breath was unlocked only at rank 50. At my rank 16, I had nothing to contribute here. This wasn't a scenario, after all.
"What's next?"
came Anastaria's thought, returning me to the issue at hand. At some moment I had even forgotten to flap my wings, staring mesmerized at how the stone and ground burned beneath me, and as a result almost fell into the pool of fire. I don't know what game mechanics came into effect when the terrain began to change, but an unbearable heat was emanating from the lake of lava, knocking off my HP as fast as an express train. I even had to fly up a little higher to avoid burning up. The lake that had appeared was bubbling and roiling, emitting heat and threatening to incinerate anything living within itself. And yet still, the spectacle was wonderful. As I was about to answer Anastaria and tell her that I had no idea what to do next, my eyes caught one unexpected phenomenon. A whirlpool, right in the center of the lake. It wasn't very large, and you couldn't see it from the shore due to the constant bubbling, yet it was clearly funneling the lava somewhere inside Barleona. It looked so misplaced in its surroundings that for a moment I didn't know what to do. This thing had no place being here. My epiphany came right away. I realized what I had to do next. Trusting my premonition and the speed of Stacy's reflexes, I flew for the center of the lake, folded my wings, and, just before plummeting into its depths like a stone, said telepathically, "Stacy, a bubble!" The flaming lake accepted me into its embrace like its own child. At the same time, the countdown timer indicated that I would be treated like a child for a very short time, just 10 seconds. Inside, the lake of fire was completely red. I swam as hard as I could, deeper and deeper, wishing to reach the end of the funnel in the allotted time, but after 5 seconds it was clear that I wouldn't make it. Maybe I was just treading lava, and the liquid's density didn't allow me to keep diving. Maybe the lake didn't have a bottom at all. In any case, I was staring at the same homogeneous red mixture below me as above, and to the right, and to the left of me. Stop. The mixture ahead of me looks much lighter. It's like there's a void there. Stopping my descent, I made several broad strokes forward and, right at the last moments of my bubble, flew out of the lake of melt into some kind of room. A quick glance backwards let me know that this room had no wall, only magma that slowly crawled to fill the space.
A shimmering force field I hadn't noticed was slowing its progress.
"Tell me, esteemed artificer," sounded an irritated female voice.
I turned to see a raven-haired woman sitting in an ancient armchair that resembled a throne. She was wrapped in a mage's white shroud and was of indeterminate age, between 25 and 50. Makeup, particularly in-game, is a scary thing.
"What made you disfigure my already aesthetic abode? Are you really so daft that you couldn't figure out how to reach me by the normal means? Why couldn't you just craft the most bare bones of artifacts?"
I was about to open my mouth and ask where the hermit was, when my eyes automatically scanned the woman's properties, and promptly got stuck in my throat. The answer to my question was sitting on the throne right in front of me and drilling me with her angry gaze.
"The hermit. Level not available."
That's impossible. The hermit had no level. This is impossible in Barleona.
Chapter 6 A Friendly Visit.
"Is that your best imitation of a telephone pole?"
the woman inquired with irritation, and waved her hand in the direction of the wall of fire.
"You ruined my abode, you invaded my sanctum, caused a bunch of noise on your way in, and now you just stand there. Now you're stiller than water, lower than grass. Now you're no longer you."
The hermit waved her hand one more time, and the wall of fire vanished, turning back into ordinary masonry.
"Dan, what's going on?"
I heard Anastarius whisper in my head.
"The lava has stopped moving. You're still alive. Perhaps you should summon me over to you?"
"No way!" The hermit butted into our conversation shamelessly, shocking me even further.
"You've got no business here." "Who's that, Dan?" "A nightmare that flies upon wings of night."
The hermit sounded like she meant business.
"Stop distracting your husband. I still need to figure out a punishment for him."
"Why a punishment?" I went on the offense, once the system glibly informed me that telepathy doesn't work from inside the hermitage. Stacy had been blocked. "I've been ordered to find the hermit. I did as ordered. There wasn't any requirement about how exactly I was supposed to do this. So I refuse to accept your punishment. As for destroying your abode, where?" I spread out my arms as if I weren't sure what the lady was talking about. "And by the way, why is it so dusty here? You're a lady, and yet you live in such filth. Since when do real players play the roles of NPCs? Is this a scenario?" "I can send you back," the hermit muttered angrily, and the recently rebuilt wall turned back into the fiery lake. I wonder if this happened only here at this location, or if the rest of the lake had turned to lava too. I bet Stacy and the other players were scratching their heads trying to figure out what's going on. What really stunned me was that I was facing a real NPC. I'd never seen it with my own eyes, but there were all kinds of rumors among the players that corp officials act the roles of NPCs in certain scenarios, especially if they fall behind on an imitator's development and behavioral heuristics. At the same time, they have to provide a truthful answer if asked whether they're an NPC or a player. An NPC will hear the question, but won't assign it any significance. They generally don't know anything about the existence of the real world. Over my 18 months of play as a shaman, and 3 years as a hunter, I had only encountered one NPC who knew that something lay beyond Barleona, Prontho, the boss of Pryke Mine. But even he had lost his knowledge once he had entered the wider world. Stop. Pryke. I had huge plans for it. Sakas, the convicts, the desire to hire some people. Why had I forgotten about all of this? My own experience teaches me that in the larger game world, no one's happy to see a player with a red band. I had to take care of this problem as soon as possible.
I get the impression that your thoughts are far from this place, said the hermit,
still unhappily, but now without the notes of anger.
A terrible punishment threatens him, yet he's off daydreaming among the clouds. Do tell why you didn't create an artifact like every other creature.
It was too obvious, I confessed honestly, shaking my head at the sight of the wall once more returning to its typical brick-based composition. A game's a game, but no one had circumvented the standard game processes. Transformations like these would have cost immense amounts of mana, or the direct intercession of some divinity that I hadn't yet noticed around me, or...
Standard, you say?
The hermit interpreted my pause in her own way, thought a little longer, and then quickly said,
All right. We'll assume you've passed the trial and appeared before me. What do you want, shaman?
Honestly, I have no idea what I'm doing here, I blurted out. To be honest, I was no less surprised than the hermit. For a moment, her eyebrows began crawling upwards, but she quickly took a hold of herself and put on a mask of implacability, allowing me to continue my thought. How many times have I told myself that I need to watch my tongue? But every time I seem to forget. I guess the right thing to do right now is to claim how great of an artificer I am, the hope of this world, and simply an ideal student. But I think that those'll just be words. There's no substance behind them.
Explain.
The hermit sat down on her throne and stared at me with curiosity.
The way I see it, you've reached the peak of artifact crafting. The cursed chess of balance, the cursed dog, the blessed visage of Iluna, the altered color of your artifacts, the holy ring of Dryal, the unicorn horn of Iluna's blessing, the lover's pendant. This is a very interesting path for an artificer, so I'm unclear as to what you mean when you claim that there's no substance to your words.
I inhaled and exhaled loudly. I didn't have anything to say. It was odd, but even though a moment before I plummeted into the lake of melted rock, I understood perfectly well that I needed the hermit, now, appearing before her, doubts appeared deep inside of me. Did I really need to step onto the way of the artificer?
You're very articulate and so convincing that I bet you've never been rejected,
the NPC remarked sarcastically, forcing me to check her properties one more time to make sure that the attractiveness stat was indeed still among them. I was still facing an imitator instead of a player, only it was some kind of a strange imitator that I'd never encountered before. Even Garanika wasn't this harsh. I don't have anything to say, I shrugged. I looked around, noticed a small stool, and took a seat without awaiting an invitation. If the hermit sits in my presence, why should I stay standing? Until I reached this place, I was entertaining the thought of setting out on the path of the artificer. I need to complete the chess set.
The chess set?
The hermit frowned.
What chess set? You wish to recreate the cursed chess set?
What's the cursed chess set have to do with it? It was my turn to be surprised. I'm talking about these. As I said this, I drew the dwarves out of my inventory bag and held them out to the hermit. The chess set of Carmadont. The hermit's eyes grew as large as two saucers. Then I found myself imprinted into the wall. I didn't even have time to notice what happened. There I was, standing a little away from the hermit offering her the chess pieces, and here I am, pressed by some mysterious force into the wall, so hard that I can't even move a finger. And between these two moments, there seemed to be nothing.
"You dared to bring this key here?"
The woman's voice resounded so loudly that the cave around us trembled. And, I mean, there was a mountain over our heads.
"You wish to remind me of my defeat?"
The hundreds of debuffs that suddenly appeared on my character caused my HP to plummet toward zero with a purpose. The hermit didn't give me a chance to reply, suggesting that her questions had been entirely rhetorical in nature. She had already decided that I had to be destroyed. Like hell! Despite the unbelievable number of status effects, no one had prohibited me from changing into a dragon, which I decided to do now. I needed only a moment to slip the dwarves back into my bag. My premonition was no longer screaming, but rather wheezing raggedly, that this entire assault was triggered by the chess set, and the hermit wouldn't calm down as long as these remained in my hands. She really had something against the dwarves. I should have shown her the orcs instead.
"A dragon,"
the hermit whispered, pressing me into the ground. I was instantly hit with debuffs blocking any transformation, yet I managed to accomplish the thing I wanted to do in the brief seconds the transformation afforded me. The dwarf pieces that had been plastered to my hand by some game mechanic were now simply in my hand. The offending item had been removed, and now I had to establish some kind of civil channel of communication with the enraged woman who had apparently once suffered some great defeat.
"How did I fail to guess this from the very beginning? Who else could craft two cursed items in the very beginning of his way? Who else has such a mind so defiled, so corrupted, that he could never imagine something holy? Of course, a follower of the tarantulas. It was a mistake to show me this key, dragon. You shall never leave this tomb until the end of your days. Even after that, I won't hand you over to chaos. I shall immure you just as your master did to my husband."
The hermit's voice was so steeped in loathing and cruelty that for several moments I forgot I was in a game and began to panic. My mind succumbed to the horror. The only thing that brought me to my senses was the game interface that continued to sway and waver at the edge of my field of vision, and the exit button, which, thank you, Luna, no one could block. I could calmly slip out into reality, make a cup of coffee, and return relaxed to deal with the hermit later. Like hell! Ain't I a shaman or what?
"Kornik, I need help!"
I yelled telepathically into the ether, understanding perfectly well that Nash Lazar had blocked my ability to do this, a fact that the system helpfully reminded me of. Well, I don't give a damn. My teacher should hear me.
Cornick!
No, this won't do. I'll need more volume. The shaman has three hands. Long ago, when I was still only setting out on my way of the shaman, I happened to get in